Bored with Friends, episode 21. Brains.
I mean, I'm not allowed to tell that story because Zach wants to stay on topic.
Stay on topic.
All right, well, we got a little off topic.
Again, 40%. I'm lazy and I'm a mooch. What I do?
This is not that kind of podcast.
Hey, Zach here. Just wanted to give a quick announcement before we got into the main show. Next month marks our one-year anniversary in podcasting, and I want to send out a huge thank you to everybody who's been listening to our show, everybody who sends feedback to us, and just in general, you guys have been great, and we've been having so much fun doing it. So thank you for listening to Bored with Friends. We have a whole new year planned ahead of us. Nah, who am I kidding? We didn't plan it. But we got some exciting reviews that we know that we're going to do, like the Doctor Who board game from Gale Force 9, if it ever comes out. We got Venom Assault from Spyglass Games, when it ever arrives. We have the Tiny Epic series. I'm going to make Walt play Tiny Epic Western. He hated Tiny Epic Galaxies, but I liked it. So I'm definitely going to make him play that so everybody can hear his most likely negative feedback just because he's a curmudgeon when it comes to gaming. Just overall, we're going to bring Devin back, Sean back, Vanessa's going to be back. She's got a Kickstarter game that's coming in that she's really excited to play and talk about on the show. I don't know if she's really excited to talk about on the show, but she's going to talk about it on the show anyway because everybody likes more Vanessa on Bored with Friends. But just in general, thank you so much for listening, and we hope that you listen in for another year. Or longer. Welcome to Bored with Friends, the podcast about hobby gaming and scaring the crap out of your neighbors, because it is that time of year again, folks. It is Halloween, and today I have Sean Bissonette with me.
Hello.
What was that?
I don't know. I tried to think of something scary, and I couldn't do it.
Oh, all right.
Yes, I'm here. Hi, how are you?
We also have Walter Scott.
I'm sitting here in the dark, quite
you
terrified.
Didn't answer my question.
That's because you still haven't changed that light bulb, I see.
Yeah, it's pretty dark.
Do you do it for ambiance, or are you just getting in the Halloween spirit, Walt?
Well, I have been playing a lot of horror games lately, trying to get my channel ready for Halloween, so...
What a segue! What kind of horror games have you been playing, Walt?
I have been playing, Alien Isolation, gearing up for something I've been doing there.
Oh, you're talking about video games.
Yeah, I'm talking about video games. Yeah. I don't have any horror board games, other than one with zombies and some genocide of zombies.
I wonder what they would want to call a game like that.
What would like they that? Call that? What would be something
know.
Clever, Zach?
Zombie Side?
Close.
World War
Make
Z?
Make it sound nice.
No.
Starring Brad Pitt and an awful, obvious Pepsi advertisement.
No, it's Zombie Side from Cool Meteor or Not. That's what we're going to talk about today in our main topic. Because it's Halloween month, and that's what you do. You're supposed to, you know, talk about horror things, right?
Or
I'm actually not much of a
Christmas.
Horror person.
That seems pretty popular.
Nightmare Before Christmas is that's a good movie. I like that one. It's an inspiration
a board game
for
of
stop
that
motion.
Yet. What would a board game of that be?
I don't know.
There has to be a board game of that. Let me go look it up.
There probably is one.
And we're about 30 seconds in. I've already derailed where Zach was trying to go.
You did.
Mission successful. I'm dropping my headset. I'm out.
All right, guys.
Well, before you go out, Sean, tell us what you found.
All right, a couple things. Number one, there's a bunch of different versions of Clue. Let's just get that right off the bat. That's pretty neat. Also, there's Monopoly and Operation with Mr. Oogie Boogie. But
so, no actual games.
Most interesting... No. They're just all reskin crap. But most interestingly, there is a Munchkin expansion pack for Tim Burton's The Nightmare Before Christmas.
Okay, that's kind of cool.
Right? Munchkin, yeah. Tim Burton's Nightmare Before Christmas edition pack. That's craziness.
I wonder what that would be like.
Yeah,
I got rid of Munchkin.
I love
Munchkin.
You
got rid of Munchkins?
Yeah, I gave one copy to Devin, and I donated the other copy to the library.
Mm.
Nobody wanted to play it anymore. We've kind of Munchkined out in this household.
I like Munchkin a lot.
I would play it again, but I didn't feel the need to own it anymore. And when Vanessa gave me an ultimatum and said, you need to get rid of some games... That was one of the ones that I easily put in the pile of six
games.
Well,
I mean, if you don't have at least three or four people to consistently play with, it's not the best thing to do. So, makes sense.
It's a fun once-in-a-while game, I feel. Anyway,
yeah,
Paul,
sure.
What have you been playing lately? I hear you have something good that someone gave
you. I have something that I kind of blame my board friends with. Isn't board friend? You're my board friends. Okay.
Yeah, look at that.
I'm blaming you for not letting me know that this existed sooner. I was very mad because last episode, you can go back and listen. It's on. We have an archive that you can go back and listen to. It's $9.99 a month. You know, you go and subscribe. It's better than WWE.
That's not true. That's not
far
true,
better
folks.
Than that.
I'm pretty sure
better than
free.
Fight Network or whatever the MLB has. All how many episodes we have to? I actually don't know. I'm gonna go with 20. We're up to 20.
I think we're at 22 now.
But I found that there is actually a love letter game of one of the two series I said I wanted. Unfortunately, it was not Rick and Morty. I'm assuming that's coming. But it is Archer. And the title alone is just told me that this was done right. It's called Archer, Once You Go Blackmail.
That's awesome. I very much enjoy that.
It's your basic love letter. The only thing that's weird is that the tokens are like an old callaway gag from, or callback gag from the first episode, where Pam, the HR rep, uses a puppet dolphin to coach people. It's never been mentioned since, but it always shows up whenever Pam's around. Like, they always reference the dolphin, even though it was never a funny joke to me, or I just don't get it. The cards themselves, I'll run through it. And there's no spoilers to go into here.
It's love letter.
But, it's love letter. So I'm not going to go over the rules of love letter too deeply. Everyone knows how it's played. Your highest card basically wins. Hold on to the number 8 until the end of the round. The two high cards, 8 being Mallory Archer, obviously she's the highest ranking person there, and the number 7 is Lana Kane. There are some different things about this game that,
I was going to ask, what's different than this one?
See, here's the thing. Because the only love letter game I've played with you guys is the Batman one.
Batman.
The number 7 card was Harley Quinn, and her thing was if she's ever in the same hand as another player, she gets discarded. Lana's power is that she gets to collect each player's hand and the extra card from the deck. Because you remember at the beginning of the game, you discard one card, and that could be Mallory, or it could just be a random whatever. They call it the secret identity card, which I guess makes sense for the setting. And then you reshuffle all those cards and disperse them again. So you basically all cards in play and put them back out. Which I like because it could put the Mallory card, if it's out of play, back into play. And that seems to be what a lot of this game does, that I don't remember Batman doing. Is that it moves around the card that's on the outside of play. It puts it back into play a lot. Several players have that ability to move that card back into play or take cards out of play.
Interesting.
Number 6.
I want to play this now.
I definitely will play it. I take it everywhere I go now in hopes that I'll run into someone that wants to play Archer with me.
I mean, I really like the Batman version, but that actually sounds cooler. I hate to say it.
The number 6 card is Ray Gillette. He gets to discard his or her hand and replace it with the hidden identity card. But he can also choose another player to do that with as well.
Hmm.
So that's again,
so they really turn this on its head.
Everything's like moving
then.
That secret identity card around. The rest of them are all multiple cards. And this is where I kind of got disappointed because. With the 6 through 8 cards in Love Letter, there's only one of each. So there's no variety that's really needed. And with Batman, I felt, it's really not needed. My only complaint with Lana's card is it's, I don't know if you guys can see it, but it's a terrible picture of
Lana!
It's just a very unflattering, rolling her eyes. There's not enough personality of Lana there. I get what that scene is. But yeah. I would have preferred her with her Tech Nines or something instead of just that. I do like that they picked one of Ray in the wheelchair. But then you go to all the other cards, and I really thought that maybe this would be the love letter that gave you different cards, but all of the cards are the exact same. They're duplicates. So it was like, eh, slightly disappointed, but the love letter is so cheap, you really can't nitpick it for the price. And me as a nitpicker, that is just something I found. Pam is the number 5 card. Cheryl is the number 4. Cyril Figgis is hands down the best card in the game, and I'm going to save him for last, though. He's your number 3. Krieger is number 2, which I was really expecting more out of his card, but eh. He basically gets to sneak a peek at the hidden identity card, and that's his thing. And Sterling Archer is your number 1. Cyril Figgis is hands down the best card in this game, because if you don't watch Archer, the joke will go right over your head. And Zach, I know you don't watch Archer, do you?
I have never seen Archer.
Okay. Sean, you
pause
have.
Pause for really? Dramatic effect.
I love Archer. I don't watch many shows, but one of the ones that I do watch, I am one season behind, though. I will give myself that.
Last season
is Archer.
The Cyril Figgis card is your number 3. He works. I don't know which card he replaces from Batman. So I don't remember what number 3 is. I think maybe 2.
Well, 3 is Bane.
Was it Bane?
No, 3.
Bane.
Yeah,
Bane.
It's when you compare hands and the bigger one wins.
Yes. Which the way this is worded is brilliant. You and another player whip out your cards only to each other. The smaller one is out for the round. I just love that it's you whip it out. I feel like we're
well.
All
right, exactly. Then
we can stop. If you watched the show, then let me tell you what.
It's always been one that people have told me to watch, and I never got around to it. I guess I don't know. Is it on Netflix?
Danger
Zone.
It's on Netflix. Yes.
Yeah, it's on Netflix.
I'll check it out.
Season 1. It's not as good as everything else.
Right.
So, like, stomach through season 1 if you can. If you can make it into the first episodes of season 2 and not laugh, then you can call it quits. You're not allowed to call it quits on season 1 because it's very short, and season 2 is so good. So,
based on your enthusiasm, well, I would say that this captures the feeling of the show, and it would do the fans justice, at least.
As much as Love Letter can. Because, like, Love Letter, as I've said before, I'll say it for anyone who hasn't watched the show before, I really feel that Love Letter is like the Uno of modern games. This could just and it's very easy to repackage, put a new label on it, and you get new enjoyment out of it. This is definitely something I am not going to get rid of. Like, Zach loves to sell games. I can't fathom doing that.
Well, speaking of Uno, Sean, what have you been playing?
So let me tell you something, guys, right now. So I went away last week from my best friend's wedding.
I love that
happy
movie.
Wedding, Keith and Alicia. I know, right?
That's not true.
But we stayed in his parents own a condo near the town where they got married, so we stayed there for a couple days, and there were a bunch of board games there for us to play, but they were all games that I hadn't played in a very long time. So what I want to talk about.
Are you taking us back
game,
in a time machine?
Don't know if you've heard about it. Called Scattergories.
Oh my god.
So this is what you do in Scattergories. So there is a 24-sided die. Because guess what, Zach and Walt? Can you guys guess?
There are 24 letters in the alphabet.
24 letters in the alphabet. So what you do? You roll that die. You get a letter. Then there's a list.
Is it a love
so
it'll
letter? Be, you know, like a love letter, perhaps. But then there's a list. And it's, you know, name of a magazine, name of a food, somewhere you would travel. So there's just all these, like, little categories. Scattergories, even. And then you just have to fill out the list. So everybody has 2 minutes or so to just fill out their list to the best that they can, and then you compare answers. If you have a unique answer, that counts as a point. After you do three of these, the same list three times with three different letters, you declare the winner of that round.
Oh.
And we played the crap out of it. We played it for, like, longer than we probably should have, because it was the only good game in the house. But yeah, we played the crap out of it, and it was amazing, and I forgot how much I love Scattergories.
You know, I have fond memories of Scattergories. Every year on New Year's Eve, we'd always go to my great meme's house, and my cousin would bring a copy of Scattergories, and it became a tradition that all the cousins would get together and play this game. We'd all just pile into the kids' room of her house, and we would just start playing Scattergories, and it was so much fun. So I think that is one of the better party games out of, you know, of the classic party games that people
like
remember.
The basic ones.
Oh yeah, I like Scattergories a lot.
I love Scattergories. I mean, we play like Uno and stuff like that too. But the only other game kind of worth bringing up, because it is like, you know, one of those normal games you would get at like Target or Walmart or something like that. But I really, really like Cranium. So when we went to, I think it was Walmart. We went to Walmart to buy like toiletries and other stuff that we needed for the house.
Naturally.
And of course, and there was Cranium Dark there. So I was like, it looked like it was just cards. So I assumed it was just the blue question. So when you have to like act stuff out or whatever the acting out ones are, I can't remember if it's blue or a different color, but not that important. But it was like an apples or Cards Against Humanity ripoff, but it was Cranium.
Mm-hmm.
So like we looked at it, and I was like, "Oh, this isn't what we want." And then we just put it away. So I mean, I don't know if it's actually good or not, but I just thought it was worth. I just thought it was strange because I was like, you know, Cranium already has all these really, you know, there's the trivia cards and there's the acting out cards and all these other things, and like they already have really cool decks. I assumed that it was just those cards without the spaces, but it wasn't. It was a whole other game, and they didn't need a Cards Against Humanity clone.
Well,
so.
No, what it is it's becoming a trend now that these like light party style games are coming out with like an adult version of them. Like
that's why it was called Dark.
Like I've mentioned Code Names before, and there's a Code Names.
Oh my god!
I think it's called Deep Undercover. And
I played that too.
You did.
I played that too. I played the night I came home. I forgot about that. The night I got home from the wedding, I played that with my brother, my roommate, and his girlfriend.
How'd you like it?
That was hilarious because it's really hard to. Most of the terms are very vulgar, or they'll be like drugs or something. You know,
something that
sexual
can lead
in
to
nature,
vulgarity. Yeah.
Or yeah, exactly. But that was wicked. Entertaining. That was it. Was very. I can imagine that getting very awkward very quickly, depending on who you're playing it with. But it was.
Now, have you played?
It was really.
Have
really
you
cool.
played the original Code Names?
Oh yeah, I played the crap out of Code Names. That's if it's like you know, we just wanted to do something quick before we're all going to bed, we'll do like two or three rounds of Code Names.
See, I like Code Names a lot. I bought the dark version, the adult version, just because we like it here a lot. But I found that because. It seemed like it was trying too hard to be dirty. Like, you can turn regular Code Names dirty easily.
True.
It didn't seem necessary. Once we finally sat down and played it, it just seemed like more cards. I mean, I still have it. I don't know. We haven't played it since, but I prefer the regular Code Names, honestly, just because it doesn't. Well, it seems like unnecessarily turned into a dirty game, and it wasn't done in a way that it just didn't need to happen. If you're a dirty person, dirty-minded person, you can just play the regular Code Names and turn it dirty.
What we want to do is combine them
together.
That would
be fun. See, that I can see is so, this game could be an expansion for the regular Code Names.
Yeah, that's what my that's what we're going to end up doing. They're still in their separate boxes for now, but we are going to just combine them into one giant deck.
Now, one thing I did they changed the artwork in it, though, and they gave the characters backstories, which I thought was really cool.
But, Walt, do you know what Code Names is?
I know of it. I've always seen the box at Zach's house and always hope that it's one of the games we play. It never gets played.
It's a lot of fun. So, I mean, essentially what happens is... two teams, a pair. So there's one person that needs to give a hint. Let me rephrase it. There's 16 cards, I believe. Just you lay down, and each of them has a word on it. So what you would need to do is some of the spaces are for your team, some of the opposing team, some are neutral, and there's one space that is going to make you lose the game. So based on the luck of the draw with the cards, you need to try to find one word to link as many of these things together, and the first person to guess all their words first wins. So if, you know, let's say that there's like cow, dog, and penguin on the field, and I say animal three, you would have one more chance than I said number to guess these cards. If you get any of them wrong, then the turn immediately ends.
Huh.
So, you know, if you guess all three of those words and you just want to guess a random fourth word to like roll the dice and see if you can get another point that round, you can try to do that if you want to. Or you can stop whenever you want. But It's a lot of fun. It's a good way to waste you know, 10-15 minutes if you just need something to do quick.
Yeah, it plays very fast, and you don't have to play as many rounds as the rules say. You just play one round and have fun with it.
I would just go until we don't feel like playing anymore. It's a Cards Against Humanity. Who goes to seven cards?
It's a team game, too, so you just bust up into teams, and you can do it however you want. We did one. It was, you know, the typical, hey, it's guys against girls or whatever. And, you know, Vanessa teamed up with her friend, Rachel, who the two of them, whenever she and her friends get together, they do that thing where their brains are in sync with each other, and they can communicate without talking, and it's really annoying. And I got to work with Rachel's boyfriend Andrew, who he and I mean, we're friendly, but we don't know each other as well. Like, I wasn't in the group when they were in school and stuff like that. So when I gave a clue that I thought was rather clever, he completely misunderstood what I meant for the clue. And that's what part of the fun of the game is, because you're trying to figure out, not only outguess your opponents, but also work with your teammate and try to, you know, convey as much information as possible with just one word. It's pretty interesting.
But yeah, my brother, one of my roommates and his girlfriend are unusually good at the game. Like, they give hints that make literally no sense. And they're like, oh, that one. And I'm like, how did you even think that that was a thing? That doesn't make any sense. And I'm good at guessing what my brother thinks, but he's terrible at guessing what I'm thinking. That's kind of that.
They also have a Codenames Pictures coming out, or it's already out, where instead of words, it's black and white drawings on the cards. And you have to use that to do it. That sounds interesting, too. I don't know if I'd like it as much as the words version, but I mean, for some people who are more visually oriented and want pictures, that it's another option for them. Cool. So you did play a real game.
Yeah, I hey, Scattergory is real.
It is real. I like Scattergory.
But no. I was so tired when I came home on Sunday. I was just like, yeah, I sat around. And then you started talking about Codenames. I was like, wait, I did play something. I did do something on Sunday.
I know you posted a picture of it. I couldn't remember if it was you or Joe who posted the picture on Facebook. And
So that was this guy.
It was that guy. All right. So I also got to play a new game. This is not the thing I bought. I didn't spend any money on this. I got invited to a game night with Devin and TJ. And we played a game called Legends of Andor, which was really fun, just to bury the lead there. Basically, cooperatively, you're heroes who are trying to save the kingdom of Andor from some bad things that are happening. And the way this game works is you each have a character. I was a mage, and you all have your own stats. You have dice that you can roll. You have, I think it was stamina or willpower or something like that, that you can, you know, raise or lower. That's basically your health in the game. You know, on your turn, you're allowed to do, it's not actions. You know, you don't have three actions to do or four actions to do. You have hours in the day that you can use up. So everything you do uses up 1 hour, and you have 7 hours to, you know, for the whole day of, you know, the work day, basically. So if I want to travel to the other end of the map and I want to travel six spaces, that's 6 hours used up just to get to the other side of the map. If I want to fight a creature, it takes up an hour of my time to fight the creature. And I have to roll dice to see if I can even beat the creature. Basically, you know, we went on quests, we were defending the kingdom, and overall, having a good time, and it was really hard. The quests that we had to, challenges would come up during the day that we had to, you know, adapt our strategies to, and we were working really well together, and everyone had different special abilities. Like, as the mage, my special ability was, if I rolled the die and didn't like the result, I could flip the die over to the opposite side and use that result instead. So I only had one die, but if I rolled a one and I needed a higher roll to beat the creature I was fighting, I could turn it over to the opposite side, which was a six. So I could immediately improve my die rolls. The only time it didn't help me was if I rolled a four. But I could also affect other people's die rolls if I brought them into combat with me. So it was a really fun cooperative game. We played the first two campaigns and had a good time with it, and I'm looking forward to playing more. Fun components. It was all standees and stuff like that, but, you know, just, you could buy things, you could buff up your character. The other characters, if they had higher, whatever the heck the term was for the health, basically, if they raised it up, they could get more dice to roll. The mage couldn't do that. He only ever had one die. But the other characters, as they got more, they had more dice available to them. And there was a rogue that, you know, it was your typical fantasy trope, you know, characters. And they had names and a little bit of backstory blurb on them. But overall, it was just, it was a good cooperative game, I felt. It had a lot of just simple elements to it, but the mechanisms, you know, made it complex enough, and the story-driven part of it just made it fun to play the game. I think they showed it to you, Walt. They were talking about it, but I don't know if you got to play it.
It sounds like something I wanted to play. I know when I saw you guys play it, I was like, wait a minute, did I miss a call? Because that sounds like something I wanted to play.
It was a game that you couldn't make it to, because we were going to play Zombicide Black Plague, another version of Zombicide, yep. But you weren't available. So we decided to play Legends of Andor instead, because it was four players.
Ah.
But I am told that they bought the expansion so that we can have more players in it. So we could try it out with more players if they want us over.
I'm going to send that to my brother.
That's a good idea. That sounds like a game you guys would like.
I'm going to group me him that right now. Boom. Done.
Look at that. We already got another game sold for Amazon.com or wherever you guys buy from.
Oh, it'll be Amazon. 100%.
Sean buy his brother, or making Sean's brother buy games.
Oh, totally.
That's what we do.
I mean, he doesn't need any of our help. He'll buy lots of stuff. There's always like a mysterious Amazon package every day to Hanson Be Wonderful.
Hanson Be Wonderful?
That's his, according to Amazon, that's his name. Handsome B. Wonderful. The first time our mailman came to the house, he was like, you handsome? And I was like, yeah, but that's my brother, so.
I never answer that with a sarcastic answer. Like, are you handsome? I don't know, you tell me.
If he had asked my brother that question, he would have gone, no. But he asked me that question, and I'm like, well, you know, thank you very much.
I'm modest.
My mother used to yell at me because I'd have packages delivered to Izon Entertainment.
Nice.
Because when you fill out those forms, you get to, it says, what's the name of your business? So I would just be a smartass and I would put that in there. That's our YouTube channel. It's still there.
It's still there.
Yeah.
That's like,
How about we talk about our game tonight?
Hey, why don't we?
Basically, for Halloween, we decided to play the Zombicide game, which is a little bit older. I mentioned it previously on the show that I bought this at Barnes & Noble at their Red Dot sale. So I got it really cheap. But I bought it to practice painting. And then we decided to actually play the game and see if it was any good. And I think overall, we had a good experience with it. We got a lot of rules wrong. I was texted by Devin letting me know what we did wrong when we played this game. But that's just normal with us, is getting the rules wrong.
My question is, were they rules we got wrong that made it harder or easier?
Harder.
Oh, okay. So the game was easier than it should have been?
No, the rules would have made it harder.
Okay.
Yes, the game was easier than it should have been.
Got it.
But the gist of Zombicide is this. You are survivors of a zombie apocalypse. Everybody takes on at least one character, and you are all trying to work together to achieve an objective in a scenario that you're about to play. And on the board, as you move through rooms, zombies will populate and spawn throughout the board. You can search rooms for items that will help you along your way, whether they're weapons or food or whatever. And sometimes you spawn extra zombies in the room when you go in there, which is actually the rule that we got wrong. Every time you open up a door, a zombie is supposed to spawn, from what we understand. We didn't do that, okay. Which is why it was easier for us. We were able to breeze through the scenario because of that.
Yeah, we destroyed those. Dude, I would set up with my sniper rifle. No one's getting
it. You were. So on each player's turn, you are given a set amount of actions that you can perform. You can attack zombies, you can search rooms, you can move. And as you do different things like kill zombies, you level up your character so that you get more abilities. Sometimes it's extra actions, sometimes it's the ability to ignore things. Like, my character had a special ability where he could basically slide through tile of zombies without any penalty to movement, which was interesting. It's everybody had their own unique powers. Some are better than others. You know, it was asymmetrical, but I don't feel like some abilities were definitely better than others. I felt I was a little jealous of Sean's character because he had some cool stuff he could do. Plus, you had better weapons. But
I had so many weapons.
The way you set this up, it's a modular board, multiple pieces, and you create the scenario by placing the boards together in different fashions according to the book. And it'll just create a cityscape. And there are, you know, buildings that you can enter. There are, you know, streets that you can, you know, move along. And every section, whether it's a separate room or like a spot on a street between two crosswalks, that's considered a zone. And you can move along these spaces using your actions, and if you see have line of sight on the zombie, you can shoot at it, or if you're close enough to it, you can hit it. If the zombie's close to you on the zombie phase, then it's going to attack you and hurt you. And the neat thing is the inventory system that you have, you can hold up to 5 cards, and each, if you get a wound, it fills one of those slots. So getting wounds actually hurts you in, you know, in the gameplay-wise, because it removes places to put things, basically. I think we got a good feel for the game. We played 2 scenarios, the intro scenario and the second one. And even though we did play it wrong, I felt it was a very thematic game, definitely. You know, what did you guys think overall of the experience with Zombicide?
I dug it. Mike, I think the only thing that I would have to say is the rules are a bit convoluted at times. I definitely dug the scenario. Definitely felt like a zombie game. I have no complaints with how the game, the general mechanics work. The only thing that I would say I didn't like about the game, because I always love to go negative. I find that that's my trend. I trend towards mentioning stuff that's negative, because if I like something, I want to improve it. But which they already have. I think it's worth saying that they've already gotten rid of the rule that I don't think any of us liked, which was the if you're shooting into a room of zombie of people, you hit other people first.
Yeah, that was it's a pretty controversial rule. They got rid of it for the Black Plague edition of the game, but we ran into that almost immediately in the intro scenario because somebody searched the room and pulled a zombie card, yeah. And zombies spawned in the room. And it was you who was outside the room,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, and I had the only gun.
And we were trying to figure out a way to how can to we get, kill the zombie yeah. without killing everyone
it's like
else.
We wanna, you obviously want to shoot the zombie, but, like, you don't attack a zombie. You attack a zone. And mm-hmm. I don't understand why you would shoot the other people first. Like, that just...
I think it has to do... It's trying to emulate, like, panic fire, or...
There are better... There are just better ways to do that.
Yeah,
like,
it felt like it could have been a
I would
die
say...
Roll.
You mean, you have a 6-sided die that... I think there was 6-sided dies. Have it be where if... If you roll below... If you roll a critical failure, a 1 or a 2 or a 3... You hit someone else. Anything above hits the zombie. A good rule of thumb with that. The immediate thing I would say, if you want to make hitting a zombie in a crowd difficult, but not instant punishment for other players, which just makes it like the way that rule's set up. Just don't engage a zombie that's in another room. You're gonna kill somebody. That's just it. You're going to kill somebody. The way I would have done it would be if you roll a 1 or a 2. A 1 or 2 because you have this 6, so if you hit a 1 or a 2 you hit somebody, a 3 and a 4 you miss everybody, and a 5 and a 6 you hit the zombie. You know, I mean
that's
just, that would that,
it.
Like
this...
that would be a very simple way to just you roll a die because I only had a gun which was just one dice. You roll the dice and you have to hit a certain number. But if you're going to create a new rule for a room, why not just change that rule altogether and just make it something simple where it's if you're in the low tier, you hit you critical fail and hit somebody that's a friend. And also, I don't understand, like, are you just, like, lighting up air? The whole shooting thing just seemed very bizarre. Instead of picking a target, like, I want to shoot this zombie, it was like, I just shoot everyone in that zone. It just felt a little weird.
The bullet went through everyone. It was a
yeah,
magic bullet. What did you think, Sean? Your initial thoughts of the game?
So, I mean, I liked it a lot. I did think it was a little easy, but apparently we played it wrong, so that makes sense. I was like, I know it was the first, like, 2 scenarios, but this is a little strange. I'm right with Walt with my only real complaint was the gun mechanic. Like, if you were, like, a room away with, like, a shotgun, yeah, you're going to light everybody up. But if you have a pistol or a rifle or a machine gun or a submachine... Maybe a submachine gun would have spread, too, but... You know, if roll to see if it's a hit. Roll again, and if it's a 1 or a 2, then you...
Yeah, I think that would have been a simple fix.
Yeah, like, shotgun or Uzi hits everyone in the room. That would make sense.
Yeah, But if it's a more precision weapon, like if you have a sniper rifle, you're going to hit who you're trying to hit. So that was my only real complaint, because it I don't know if everybody is inside the same building very often, but in the very first scenario, very first game, very first turn, and then that for that to happen, that's kind of like what are we supposed to do now? Moment.
I felt it was thematically appropriate, though, that happened to us, you know? Like,
oh, no, totally. No, it was 100% like, oh, obviously the first time you're doing this, you know, crap is going to fly. But, you know, it was a fun game. I liked it a lot. And it's the same kind of deal like with Ghostbusters where, you know, if the six of us are all together again, I'd like to try it again. I'd like to do some more of the campaign stuff. That'd be really cool.
No, I definitely want to play some more. We need to work out a night to do that. But, I mean, overall, I felt the game was very thematic. It just, my favorite part about it was, like, it built scenarios, like, almost like we were in a zombie movie. I mean, at one point, you know, we were discussing strategies in this game where you were in the middle of the street with your lone weapon, you know, fighting a horde of zombies that was coming from one side and another, and from one end of the street and another horde that was spawning on the other end of the street, and you were just turning back and forth, and that was your turns. But it was just like an epic moment, like Sean's last stand before he gets, you know, swarmed by zombies.
That was really cool. Yeah.
Defending me to go into the building and get the objective and stuff like that. And it was a really cool moment. And I think I stole it from you by killing some of the zombies in the horde, and you got mad. But it was still...
I get it. You wanted to get some experience points and also steal my thunder and make my death worthless, but that's fine.
But you didn't die.
True. I did not die, because somebody got to the end.
Now, this game, it retails for, like, $90. Do you guys feel like this was a $90 game?
Yeah. I haven't seen all the scenarios that it has yet.
Okay.
I don't think if a game's going to cost $90 and have the minis that it had, which they were good, and Zach did a modest job painting them up. He did well. You did well, buddy. I'm going to give you a little pat on the head.
How much did it hurt to say that?
None at all. I was the one that gave you pointers, so I'd have to do good, otherwise I'm a bad
coach. Oh, so you're taking credit. You're backhandedly taking credit for how good they came out.
Yes.
It's a modest brag. What did Devin call it? A humble brag?
Yeah, something like that.
I think there's enough there for the game. If you're a big fan of zombies and you're a big fan of board games, $90 might seem appropriate to you. Someone like me, no, I don't think $90 is going to be it's just not going to be a seller for me. It's not a well. If it were like a Walking Dead game, like if it had been what I think it was probably attempting to be with all the characters in it, a Walking Dead like game, yeah, I think you'd have a lot more people buying it for $90 and seeing a lot of value there because it's a collector's piece. Which, if the game is popular, and I don't know how long it's been out, but I could see them doing. If it had been a Night of the Living Dead or Dawn of the Dead kind of thing, I could see it, but it's just Zombicide, so it's its own thing. Then the reason I say that, I see the look on Zach, like, what the hell are you talking about? You bought Ghostbusters. But, like, that's a franchise in of itself. That's a collectible for the very few Ghostbuster things that I have. Zombicide's a good game, but I would definitely not want to pick it up for anything more than $50. I feel, for me personally, because also you also have to take into account, as I think every listener should, anytime I give my opinion on stuff, it's the frequency at which I play games. You know, I'm not always available to play games, and apart from playing with Zach, I never get a chance to play. No one else around me likes to play board games.
So your typical answer is you're okay with other people paying for the game and you get to play.
That's why I said I like the my rating system will always be try, buy, or avoid like hell, and I would say try this one.
Yeah, okay. Sean, would you have paid $90 for this game?
Yes and no.
So when I look, so it going way back to episode one with the X-Wing minis and such, the values in the eye of the beholder and
true.
This, that, the other things. So when I compare this to other $90 games, so like Dead of Winter and...
Still waiting to play that game.
I don't think I don't think Betrayal's $90, but a lot of these more bigger, more expensive games. Personally, I don't like this one as much as the couple of other $90 games I've played, but I do see why this game's $90. So I like it a lot. If it was like $60, I would say it's like a steal. So like or $50, $60, that's totally a steal. For it to be 90, I do like the game a lot, but I think it's a tad overpriced. Like you could probably get away with like 70 or 75, but once it gets past that, I know that $20 isn't a lot of money at the end of the day, but it's, you know, do I think that this is as deep and as good as Dead of Winter as far as, like, you know, pretty crazy zombie games go? Not for me, but this is also a different kind of game because this is more of a campaign game. So if I'm looking at, like, Pandemic Legacy and that's $90, like, how much? I don't think there's as much value when compared to some of the other campaign games I've played, but I do think it's definitely worth that, close to what they charge for it.
All right. Well, that being said, so this is the original version of Zombicide. You can get it much cheaper than $90. The original MSRP was $99.
Gotcha.
I just wanted to see if you thought that was worth it. I paid a lot less than that for this game. And for the amount that I paid out of pocket, which was about $20.
Oh, geez. Okay.
It was a steal.
Yeah, definitely.
That's totally a steal. $20, absolutely.
This game is definitely a buy.
Yeah. And that's what it came down to. I mean, it was on the Red Dot sale at Barnes & Noble, like I mentioned, so it was already half off, and then I had some Barnes & Noble gift cards. My actual out-of-pocket cost to me was $20. And the amount of plastic that you get in this game, the thickness of the cardboard that they use for the boards, all the little chits and bits and stuff like that, I think it's definitely worth trying it for a price like that. And because this is the original Zombicide, you're probably going to be able to find it for a lot cheaper than the recent versions like Black Plague and stuff like that. Although, honestly, I'm very interested in trying Black Plague because they fix the whole... you know, the shooting scenario, the problem that we had with the game. Overall, I really enjoyed the experience with this. Now, what you mentioned, you know, if this had had, you know, Dawn of the Dead or one of those franchises on it, you would see more value in it. But honestly, and maybe this is just me being ignorant of, you know, all the different zombie movies, but it's a genre that, you know, this is a generic zombie genre. You know, they made up their own story to it. But it pretty much transposes into Walking Dead and Dawn of the Dead and those things. Like, the overall zombie story is almost always... There's some similarities between them all, I feel.
Yes,
so you could make this into whatever game you want.
You can, and yes, but there's... It's like if you had... trying to think of like a good comparison. But let me, the reason being that, you know, all zombies mimic... something like Night of the Living Dead is because you have to remember that, you know, back in the 70s, zombies really weren't a thing. George Romero's version of zombies, they really were, and I think this is fitting that we're talking about this on Halloween, he really did create them. Before then, zombies were typically like your voodoo-possessed people kind of things.
Like witch doctor kind of stuff. Yeah.
Every culture had some form of zombie, but they weren't like this. George Romero is when that, like, that outbreak style of zombie started, where it's like they have rules: shoot them in the head, burn them, they infect you like a vampire, almost that kind of thing. That's something that started with George Romero. He had that perfect combination of stuff with Night of the Living Dead, and then moving on to Dawn of the Dead, Day of the Dead, and I know there's another one. Sean, there's another of
Shaun
the Dead,
of the
isn't
dead.
It? There's
Wait, hold on.
Night of the Living Dead.
There's Land
of
the Dead.
Day of the Dead. And I know there's Land of the Dead, but there's one in between.
Yeah, it's Shaun of the Dead.
Yeah, it's Shaun of the Dead, right?
Shaun of the Dead.
Well, yeah, Shaun of the Dead's great. That's my favorite one.
it would be funny for you, Zach, if you've never seen the original Dawn of the Dead.
Did you say Land of the Dead? The weird, pulpy.
That's the last weird one. Was the one where like everyone's in a city and you got a zombie that like learns to shoot a gun, that kind of thing, and he's like.
Yeah. There's Night of the Living Dead, Dawn of the Dead, Day of the Dead,
really?
Land of the Dead.
Really, another one. But anyway, and then of course when Resident Evil came out, they made it like a virus where it's like it's Resident this thing, it's this outbreak, Evil. And that started spawning Resident Evil really brought zombies back, and Walking Dead is just kind of keeping it going. So yes, everyone's mimicking that, but it's. Like, let's put it this way. We all loved the idea of Venom Assault and can't wait to play it. Hint, hint. Give us Venom Assault, please.
the estimate from the last email is it's going to ship out in November.
We talked about your game on our show.
So soon.
Give us our copy, goddammit. I'm puffing my chest out
reason,
a little bit.
Not because we paid for it.
We got 11 people that want to know our opinion of your goddamn game. No, I love you guys. Just I'm really looking forward to it. But like, let's use them as the example here. What is their game retail for?
I don't know.
Let's say that was
it's probably a $50 or $60
game. $50 or $60 game. If that was G.I. Joe, if it was actually G.I. Joe, you could definitely see that game costing $80, $90. Because of
well, yeah, because
alone.
They have to pay for the
because
license.
Then it's like if you're a G.I. Joe collector, you're like, oh my god, this is another G.I. Joe toy for me to have. This is something I could put with my G.I. Joe collection. Same where if they had actually gotten the rights to Transformers, you know, it's like it's the difference between Transformers and GoBots or whatever, or Transmorphers the movie.
Oh,
and
don't
Transformers,
go there.
You know what I mean? It's yeah, Transmorphers is. Is the same idea, but it's a different name, different characters. It's mimicking what it's supposed to be, but when you have that, when it's not just a generic game, when it is what it's supposed to be emulating, it feels special. And here's the thing: even if you did have something like Dawn of the Dead or Night of the Living Dead, you probably would have these same exact characters. They probably wouldn't be as wacky and zany as they are, like the girl with the chainsaw. Who I think is probably a reference to Lollipop Chainsaw. I think that's who... Everyone seemed to be a reference to someone else. The girl with the katanas, I'm thinking, was a reference to Michonne. The police officer, I'm thinking, was a reference to Rick from... Rick or the two police officers in the Dawn of the Dead. I think there was even a guy who references Shaun of the Dead. It was very much all over the place in terms of there was enough there that was paying homage to zombie movies. That
I can see what you're saying. I mean, like I pre-ordered the Doctor Who game and it's still not out.
But imagine
yet.
If that was called Mr. Time.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, part of you know the appeal of this game is that it's Doctor Who. You know that is something that I really really want to have a good Doctor Who board game. Just like I really want a good Transformers game, but
Sean, you saw Community.
And
what was the Doctor Who clone in that? Doctor Spacetime?
Oh, I don't know.
No, Captain.
Probably.
Spacetime.
I've seen Community here and there.
Professor
I haven't
Spacetime.
Been. A, hold on.
Yeah, I get it.
Community.
So, like, I'm jonesing to play a real time travel game, and I would, you know, I could play a regular, you know, it could be a generic
Inspector
game
Spacetime.
About. You know, a Detective Spacetime or whatever you just said.
Inspector Spacetime.
Inspector Spacetime. Wow, that's a mouthful. So it could be that, but if it's Doctor Who, it's better. So yeah, I get what you're saying. You know, you like the familiarity of the franchise on top of what, you know, could be a good game. And, I mean, overall, I'm not a huge zombie fanatic. I really like Shaun of the Dead, and I've watched, you know, Evil Dead and other games like, other movies like that. This, to me, you know, was just an encompassing of just a love letter to zombie movies, and it worked for me. I thought they did a good job with it. It had needed some tweaks and things, which clearly they did, because every time a zombie side goes up on Kickstarter, it makes like $1 billion.
So, you know, people like it a lot, and they just keep tweaking the system and adding more to it. And there's expansions and things that are going with it. I mean, at $20, I feel like I ripped off Cool Mini or not, but I've never tried the game before.
Yeah,
so, and really, I just bought it for the plastic.
For some reason, you're not taking into account the gift cards you paid with.
Yeah,
it's not.
I'm not, because I'm counting what I spent.
You spent gift cards, which were money or that someone else had already paid them. One thing I would like
I'm
to
talking
know,
about my
out of pocket
cost.
We have to ask a game creator one time. I'd love to find, like, even if we got like the creators of Zombicide on the show, hint hint guys, come on our show. I would like to know what that feels like. Not necessarily just making a game, but and having it be widely successful, like I'm sure Zombicide is, especially in today's climate. But when you have a game come out and fans just kind of see one thing they don't like and immediately like demand that you change it and you have to change it. I'm wondering if it was something where it was like, I just want to know what that, what the internals were there, like what the drama was behind the scenes. Was there that one guy in the office that was like, no, it ruins the game. Damn it, it must stay the same. Or were they okay? No, well, we didn't think that worked, and we didn't think of that. Here's our solution. That kind of thing. I would always like to know what happened behind the scenes.
Well, you kind of know what that feels like. I mean, with working in film and stuff, it's, you know, the movies that we've made and fan feedback that we've gotten, people have demanded that we make changes to things, and basically you just say no.
Yeah, but they did. With
I mean,
this,
if it's,
they can, you know?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, because we're done with that. But with, I mean, I can imagine that there's no one who's going to, not everyone is going to like your product. I mean, we found things to nitpick about this game, but I think overall we like the product. It's a nice game. But you're always going to get that feedback where someone's not going to like it and someone's going to criticize it. And unfortunately, the people who are the loudest voices are usually the biggest critics. Like, those are the ones you hear the most. And, but if everyone is saying, we don't like this, then maybe you should listen.
Yeah.
And I think, generally speaking, everyone hated that rule. But they lived with it because they liked everything else about the game, which speaks great, you know, things about the game itself, that people still came back to back the other Kickstarters for the other versions of Zombicide and all the expansions. So, I mean, I don't know if I would, like, you know, I know someone who owns Black Plague and I want to try it. I don't think I would own it for myself. Like, this is going to be my copy of Zombicide. I don't know if I need every single version. In fact, I know I don't need every single version. And in fact, Vanessa will tell me I don't need every single version, but
that's
why. Well,
overall,
for yourself,
it's just
to do that for you.
But you know, it, practically speaking, you know, I have a copy. I don't need another game that just adds a little bit to it. I might look into expansions for this one once we get done with the campaign, though. That would be something I would be interested in.
Just new characters, or
I think they add new characters and new types of zombies and new boards and new scenarios to play. You know, and the neat thing is that you can look online and there are other people have made fan-made scenarios too, just rearranging the boards in a different way and coming up with, you know, objectives for people to do. So this game has endless replay value, quite honestly. And, you know, if you like to paint, there's a ton of miniatures to practice on. As I've said before, it's a great practice game. All right.
Indeed.
I think, have we said everything I had to say about Zombicide, guys?
I think so.
All right. Long enough.
Good, because I'm running out of battery life.
That's what people want to hear at the end of a podcast.
I'll probably cut that out. Or maybe not. Depends. All right. We'll wrap it up here. Good night, everybody.
That wraps up this episode of Board with Friends. If you have questions to ask, grievances to make, or comments to deliver, follow us on Twitter at Board with Friend, like us on Facebook, or just send us an email at boardwithfriends42@gmail.com. If you enjoyed this show, check out some other great podcasts like Talk Wrestle Talk or the local multi-